Do you like to be the first? Name of your sex tape? Well, if you like to be the first to listen to podcasts, you might want to check out our Patreon, because now we're offering a brand new membership tier called Name of Your Sex Tape. I couldn't help it, guys. I'm sorry. For £5 a month, you'll get an ad-free version of our weekly episode on a Tuesday, a full day earlier than its usual release. So you can be the very first to talk about how funny our guest was, how quickly you cracked the case, or how badly I answered a question. Plus, you'll get all the benefits of our regular tier, including our live Zoom records, a special shout out on the podcast, and if you really like to hear us talk, we've got an entire back catalog of extra content. Check it out on patreon.com/drunkwomensolvingcrime.
Name of your sex tape. Name of your sex tape.
Name of your sex tape.
Fancy coming along to see Drunk Women Solving Crime live?
Ooh, yes, please.
Why not join us for our monthly London residency at the marvellous Museum of Comedy? We've got monthly shows through to June.
Plus, every show is a double header, so you get to see us record not one, but two episodes with two fantastic guests.
You can find tickets on our website, drunkwomensolvingcrime.com.
Shows are selling out fast, so be quick.
Noice.
Noice.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Drunk Women Solving Crime. My name's Katie Wilkins and I'm an author and comedian. I'm joined by screenwriter Hannah George.
Hello.
And writer-comedian Taylor Glenn.
Hello.
This is where brandy meets bludgeoning, mimosa meets misdemeanor, and port meets prostitution. It's a true crime podcast with a twist of lime. Coming up on Drunk Women Solving Crime.
So the prisoners do actually cook. They probably have all these cooking utensils just like lying around.
It's so funny when other Hannah calls. Cool Hannah, cool Hannah.
That's right. Yeah.
I'm just an education in the 1100s.
Who do you think you are? Do you think you are?
Was it that?
Thank you, I'm here all week.
Now it's time. Drunk Women Solving Crime.
Welcome to another episode of Drunk Women Solving Crime. We are joined this week by the fantastic Hannah Cunningham, also known as Empty Alien, and she is makeup artist and content creator. Welcome, yay! Hannah Cunningham!
Yay! Oh my god, oh, it's so therapeutic to hear you say that in your voice. I've heard it so many times with other people, and I'm like, one day it's going to be me. Okay, oh. Thank you so much for having me, guys. I'm so
excited. Thank you for joining us. You look amazing. Like, oh, we've got a picture that we're going to release, obviously, when this comes out. But, like, oh, my God, Hannah looks amazing.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, and your work is amazing. I'm just trying to conjure up an excuse to hire you. I'm like, I don't know where I'll go with one of your creations, but I'm going to do it.
Hey, look, what? Halloween's coming up. You know,
this is it.
Yeah.
We could book Ministry of Sound, guys.
And can I just say that what happened before we started recording was, because obviously Hannah and I have the same name, we were trying to work out how we're going to be differentiated. And Taylor suggested Cool Hannah, and of course then me. So
I didn't specify.
Yeah, you filled in those blanks, Island Hannah.
Island.
But Cool Hannah, thank you for being with us.
More than happy. Thank you so much.
Well, Empty Alien, Hannah Cunningham, we have one question on this podcast. Have you ever been the victim of a crime?
I have. Yeah, it involves a stalking. And me at about, I was about 12, 13 at the time.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I know. So I was like, I was out shopping with a friend, and basically my mum had taken me and her into like the local high street because, and let us sort of go off on the reins just because we wanted to be independent, you know. Yeah. And I was in, I went into WH Smith and I was looking at like the new pencil cases.
Yeah, good choice. Good choice.
Absolutely classic.
Yeah,
a Pepsi one, that was always a favourite.
Yeah, a classic one that's like a little Coke or maybe like a fluffy one, you know.
Oh, I like the fluffy ones.
Oh, I know. Like a little pink sparkly one. Oh.
We're all sort of slightly trying to avoid getting to the stalking, aren't we? We're like, let's talk about pencil cases for a bit longer.
Let's keep it light. Yeah.
Did you have the Friends pencil case? I had that one.
It really sets the scene for what an innocent age that is. Yeah. Like, it is. Like, what do you go for? Something to hold my writing implements, please.
Yeah. And a matching folder, of course.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah, so I was there and I was looking at it and then I felt, I was like really quiet. It wasn't a busy store. And like, I remember feeling like someone was really close behind me. And then I felt my little denim skirt like lifting up.
Oh,
and I was like,
God.
Oh my God. And I like froze. Oh. I just walked away around the other side of the aisle. And I could see his like eyes looking through the slats in the thing. And I was like, oh my God.
No.
So I just grabbed my friend and I was like, we've got to go.
Yeah.
And then we went downstairs, went outside and just kept going into different shops along this high street. And every time I turned around, I could see that he was following me.
Oh,
and
my God.
He was probably about late 40s. He was quite short and he was wearing just like kind of like a, I don't know, like all beige clothing. And he had like a comb over. Just like if you imagined a creepy man.
Yeah, that's classic.
Like a creepy man.
Stereotype. Not to judge wearers of beige, but there's something
beige
about
comb over.
Yeah. This continued for like maybe half an hour and I was just getting really freaked out.
That's terrifying.
Yeah. And then I went and I think either my mum told me she was back in WH Smith, so I was like, I'm going to go find her because my mum's really scary. And I went up and I just like burst into tears. I was like, there's a man following me. Aww. And as I'd gone up the escalator to meet her, she turns and that he's coming up the escalator behind him. And I don't think he anticipated that my mum was going to be at the top of it.
Ooh.
And she went, because like my mum is very like, so they live in Banstead and they're Surrey folk and they're very well-spoken and calm, but she grew up in Tooting. So
nice.
Suddenly she's like, you fucking think that's funny, do you? And she was like chasing, and he was like,
nice.
He just like sped walk out and she's like chasing him down the stairs.
Excellent.
It was a whole thing. Yeah, awful. Obviously we went to the police.
Great.
Yeah, and they were, the first time I reported it, it was like they were really helpful and really nice and they were like, yeah it's really good that you stopped it before it went any further, da da da. And then I actually saw him again, maybe like a couple of months later. He was doing it to someone else.
Oh,
I fucking saw, I saw him in Superdrug following this girl and he caught eyes with me and then he left. And I'd been given a crime number, you know, when you get a reference number. Yeah. And so I was like shocked and then I rang it. And I honestly, this is awful. So I rang it and this woman answered. I told her what happened. And she said, what do you want me to do about it?
You're fucking kidding.
Oh, no.
And as like a 13-year-old, I was like, my faith was shattered that the police could help. It was awful. And then I told my mum and she called that number and she went,
and then they got the Tooting treatment.
And then I had a very polite phone call back and they wanted to take my full statement.
Wow.
Good.
How does that person have a job doing that?
This is some time ago now. I wonder if she's still there, but
I hope she wasn't there like that afternoon. Like,
yeah.
I think that's like you're a fucking kid.
I was a child.
Like,
I know.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And reporting a predator. You know what I mean? Like, this isn't just someone stole my pencil case.
Yeah. This is going to help you catch a bad guy.
I know. Horrible.
And then you will get, like, you know, pats on the back. Like, I'm helping you do your job.
Exactly.
Also, it was like it was happening at the time. Did you call, like, from the. So it's like, what do you want me to do about it? It's like, it's literally fucking happening.
Yeah, I was like, he's here.
Yeah, and they send were just someone. Like, I have a location and I have the suspects.
Yeah.
So,
and I was like, oh, sorry.
It's so upsetting.
I know. Like, sorry, I didn't mean to bring the tone down.
No, guys. No, it's because this is because also, like, I think it's brilliant that you went to the police to start with and that you rang the number, because, like, so many, this happens to so many people and they don't go to the police. And maybe they're picturing that lady on the phone.
Yeah.
But, like, it's really important, because then you've got the crime statistics, because this is a crime and it needs to be dealt with. It needs to be taken seriously. And it also that's so sad, because, I mean, there's so many, we can't unpack all the reasons why this is sad.
Yeah.
But, like, we sometimes get emails from, like, people that work for the police that are like, oh, we're really, you know, that person that said this, that wouldn't happen now. We all work really hard. We all take this really seriously. We think we're doing a good job, actually. Because sometimes we're like, oh, girl, the police, what do they know?
Yeah,
and like, and then it's really upsetting, because there are all these people that really are working hard, and then there'll be some dickhead on a phone like ruining it for like all these diligent people that want to catch the bad guys.
Definitely. And it totally like made my opinion of the police, like, it did shatter it a little bit. Growing up, I was a bit like, so.
Of course.
Oh, man. And then did you ever see him again, or like?
No. Oh, once he was getting the bus, I did see him, but I was much older at that point. And I think he saw me and thought, I'm not going to. Because at that point, I was probably like 18 at that point, and I was like,
you could take him as well. Like, what we need is your mum to just grab him by the ear and frog march him to the police station. Like, that's just what needs to happen.
Yeah.
Do you know, like, was he ever, because it sounds like he was a complete repeat offender, like, did you sort of, like, in the local paper or anything, did you ever see that he had been sort of reprimanded for it? Because it feels like all you need to do is kind of send a send a policeman into town, like, because it sounds like he's doing it all the time in shops, like, he has a kind of
gets covered.
It seems crazy.
It shouldn't be so hard to bring down Mr. Beige.
Mr. Beige.
That's the bottom line. It really shouldn't.
Yeah, it's crazy.
We always ask on this podcast, if you had the perps in custody now, what would you say to him?
Oof, I don't know if I'd use my words. I want to hit him.
You're allowed to hit him in our jail.
You really are.
I would like to take some sort of, like, not hard enough that I would then be arrested. Like, maybe like a pepper grinder or a...
Okay.
Something that might be around, like a...
Yeah. And what do you think, what prison do you think this is? Do you think, like, more pepper on your gruels? I know that people in prison don't eat gruels.
As I said that, I just realised that I'm thinking of basically near my parents' house, there's a jail, it's got a restaurant in it called The Clink, and so the prisoners do actually cook food. So I was thinking like, oh yeah, they probably have all these cooking utensils just like lying around. I've never been there.
So you could go and eat at The Clink.
Yeah.
And the prisoners...
Hightown Prison, yeah. So if you want, I'm plugging Hightown Prison.
Please.
Can I just give a shout out, please, to my favourite prison?
What a great idea.
See, I would have just assumed that, like, maybe in your vision on the Zoom call, there's, like, some salt and pepper. But the fact that we've got a restaurant recommendation is even better.
Of all the ways I thought this story was going to end, it's not with a restaurant recommendation.
In a prison.
Pepper grinder is good, though. That can be hefty. That can be hefty. Yeah. And maybe some fragments go in the eyes. Pepper in the eyes.
He'll be sneezing, you know. Yes. He'll be crying. Be unpleasant for 5 minutes.
To this.
Yeah. I'd probably beat him, yeah. I don't think I have any words apart from just, how dare you.
Yeah, 100%. And also the fact, like, at the beginning of the story, like, he touched you, and absolutely, I mean, that sort of takes it to a completely different, I mean, it's,
that's full on assault.
Yeah, like, it's like, the fact more wasn't done is really, like,
But this is, like, even Taylor Swift struggled to get justice, that guy that pinched her ass.
Yeah, exactly. So what, like, was I going to get with the denim skirt being slightly lifted, you know?
But now we have justice. Well, okay, eventually we'll track this guy down, but we have cathartic justice.
Yes, cathartic justice.
It's nearly as good. We, yeah, it does sound like he's a repeat offender and he does need to be caught because he's picking vulnerable people that don't have mums that can chase him down.
Yeah, exactly. I'm lucky she was there.
Yeah, that's full on.
Mm-mm. And there was a little bit of like, maybe from the police side of like, oh, what were you wearing?
There was.
Wow. And I was wearing a denim skirt with over-the-knee socks that had rainbow stripes on them. I was a child.
Because, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I was fucking like 12, 13. Like, of course I was wearing something stupid, but like...
And like, you're allowed to wear that? That's...
Yeah, of course. I should be allowed to wear that without, you know, inviting a predator. Anyway.
No. Oh, that's...
Fuck that argument. There are so many really good memes that are dealing with that. Like, yes. we're not even gonna unpack that.
We've got this.
And our audience is already like sold on like, the whole concept. Like,
preaching to the choir.
Yeah.
I can't wait to have violent pepper grinder dreams tonight because I know I will. And I'm excited.
Now it's time. Drunk women solving crime.
So, I have a case, and none of yous know anything about it, or do you? So, now, this case that we're going to be discussing involves a murder, it involves a king, and it involves a scandal that rocked an entire country to its core. It's got everything. Apart from women, there are no speaking parts for chicks in this case. But you can't have everything, you woke snowflakes. So,
okay. Detective Sasshole. Here she
is. In the house.
Here she is.
No speaking parts.
So I'm going to start this story with someone being made an understudy. And my question to you is, what profession were they an understudy to?
Oh, I thought you could only be an understudy as an actress.
Yeah.
I thought that was where the word understudy came from.
Same. So we have acting.
Yeah, that's the only context I know that term, because otherwise, what else could you replace? Like, no, you write the novel. I have a cough.
Understudy. Could it be anything to do with studying? So...
Okay.
So, no.
No, you know what? Cool Hannah is the closest. Are we sticking with this title? I'll mix it up so I don't insult Island Hannah too much. They're an understudy to the profession of the Archbishop of Canterbury.
Oh, wow. So the Archbishop of Canterbury has an understudy. Is it actually called an understudy?
Yes.
That's hilarious.
Or at least...
Really?
It definitely was, because my next question is, what year is this?
1680.
1680?
I reckon that's a good guess.
Yeah, I feel like the Archbishop of Canterbury has been around for a while.
Yeah, he's so old, right? Oh,
yeah. How does he do it?
Like... Yeah.
That's how Canterbury feels. Like, and you're just like...
I don't know whether he's changed recently, but I know there was one called Rowan Williams, and I always got him confused with Rowan Atkinson. And I was like, when did Mr. Bean become the, like...
Well, because Rowan Atkinson used to do a bit where he pretended to be a vicar, so it's very confusing.
That might be... Yes, yeah. But I'm going to go a little bit later than Cool Hannah, I think. I'm going to go... That's more when I say it.
It's so funny when when other Hannah calls Cool Hannah Cool Hannah.
Because I don't have to. If I say Hannah,
you don't know what I'm talking about.
I'm going to say 1912.
Oh, Titanic. Very nice.
Classic.
She's back doing a classic.
The date that popped into my head was 1780.
Okay, in that case... Cool Hannah is the closest again.
Oh.
But actually still quite far away. The year is 1150.
Oh, God. No way near then. Okay.
That was anti victory.
Uber historic. We're in the 12th century.
Is this the oldest case then?
I actually think it might be.
One where Katie got really mad at the fact that people took animals to court.
That was
and I
really
believe
old.
Something happened in yeah. Something happened in like 10 something. But this is definitely in the realms of the oldest one we've ever done.
Yeah, it's up there if not.
I'm honoured.
So I'm going to cut to the chase, you guys. The understudy to the Archbishop of Canterbury that we are discussing is a little known guy called Thomas Becket. And you may have heard of him from Off of History. Now, we tend not to pick famous cases, but this one is so old it has dinner at 5 p.m. Thank you, I'm here all week.
I didn't know this is who Thomas Becket was.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I know the name and I would have said, like, he's an 18th century author.
Didn't he do a tour called Wallop recently?
Oh, Rob Becket. Okay.
Rob Becket.
You know what? Your questions will be answered in time.
Is murdered.
Yes.
But we don't know anything else.
Well, you might do if you know history.
I repeat.
Okay, so this is super famous. A lot of people obviously already know this case, but it has such drama in it that I just thought it was worth exploring in a fun true crime kind of way.
Do you know what? I'm with Taylor. I don't know much. I've heard of Thomas Becket, but I do not know much about him at all.
Same. Okay.
Now the 12th century, though. I mean, that is my foresee.
I think this is going to be one of those cases where you're like, I did know that by the end, you know. It's going to fill in some blanks of like some
I think
famous.
You'll be pleasantly surprised by my ignorance, Katie. So it's going to be fun.
We'll see. Like, a lot of this, I think, is direct inspiration for Game of Thrones. So we shall see. Thomas Becket was born in Cheapside in London in 1119 or possibly 20. His dad was a merchant, but he was rich enough to buy Thomas a good education. So they're sort of their social climbers in a very demarcated situation.
Although, of course, a good education then is like, this is the sun and we think it's always there. That's right. Yeah. I'm dissing education in the 1100s.
I know. I mean,
one's safe from Taylor Glare.
they've got books, Taylor. Jesus. Basically, he's very clever. And he ends up with lots of opportunities and he's very good at diplomacy and he rises through the ranks and he gets this gig as the understudy to the Archbishop of Canterbury in about 1150. He's probably about 30 years old. He's been abroad. He's done all sorts. Now, he has this position for 12 years. But before we get to what happens after those 12 years, I'll just let you know he does a lot. So while he's being an understudy, he's like going on important missions. He's got jobs, responsibilities. He goes to Rome. And during this time, this 12 years of his, I'm in the understudy, he gets introduced to King Henry II and they get on really well and they develop a very close, great friendship. And King Henry loves what a clever guy Becket is. He's so great at decisions. He's so great at diplomacy. He's an all-round lad. He's a good egg. He really likes him. And so that is how much King Henry II loves Thomas Becket. They've got this very close friendship. They get on really well. And he loves him so much, he gives him a new job. So Thomas Becket is still the understudy to the Archbishop of Canterbury. And he gets given this new job by his new best friend, King Henry II. So my question is, what job do you think King Henry II gives Thomas Becket?
Ooh. I'd love it if it's really shit. Just like literally like emptying the chamber pots, old boy. Like, yeah. Thinking that's such
it's an honor. It's an honor. It's royal piss.
I'm thinking of like, you know, in Blackadder when they make whoever they don't like be the executioner.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, man. Yeah, because you're thinking of actually back in the olden time days, there can't be that many jobs.
No.
But also what I'm thinking is that if he was the understudy to the Archbishop of Canterbury, then it maybe it's like a vicary kind of role, if you see what I mean, like a religious role. So is he maybe like the that he makes him the vicar of his church? I don't know. Does he make him like his own personal vicar?
Oh, that's nice. Like, yeah, I see where you're going.
Does he do something for the Pope?
Okay,
like, that's why I went to Rome.
Pope's soap.
Now, these are all excellent guesses.
Are they?
Even Pope soap.
If anything, that's the best one. they are not correct. What he goes in a slightly different direction. He gives him the job of being the Chancellor.
Oh.
Now, that is like almost the exact opposite of being religious, because the way that everything is structured in these days, being the Chancellor, so Henry makes Becket the Chancellor in 1155, but the Chancellor's job is to make sure that all the rich landowners and churches give the king money. So it's actually a little bit at odds with being the understudy to the Archbishop of Canterbury. You might say there's a conflict of interest. But, you know,
it's a little giving with one hand, taking with the other.
Yeah, it's a little bit, oh, okay.
So he's almost like a bailiff. I mean, I suppose you're the Chancellor, aren't you? So you're not the actual one that goes and takes the fridge.
Is the Chancellor not a bailiff?
Well, yeah.
But yes. So he's still doing his archdeaconing, he's understudying, he can multitask, he's got a little side hustle. But in 1162, Theobald of Bec, the Archbishop of Canterbury, dies. Dun, dun, dun! And that means...
he's got the gig.
Well, he could have the gig. And in, yes, correct answer, King Henry II gives him the gig. He was the understudy. But yes, he gives that job to Becket. So Thomas Becket's election to the post of Archbishop of Canterbury is confirmed on the 23rd of May, 1862. I bet I've said loads of dates wrong. 1162. My brain does not work. By a royal council of bishops and noblemen. Well, these are two major jobs. This is no longer a side hustle. This is the start of the Troubles.
So cool Hannah is making some cool notes over
there. I love it. I love that we have another note taker.
I love the idea that it's like 18 and then crossed out.
No. Oh, God. Yeah. Because I'm like, this is like if your history teacher had been drunk all the time, which maybe yours was.
A drunk French teacher, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And he had his own little office that was right off of the classroom. Oh, so man. No one ever monitored him. And he'd come out of there and we're like, whoa. Le bubble.
Oh, wow. and was he like, je suis, oh, no, wait, je pas, oh, shit.
It was like this weird frenetic monologue. He would just go like,
Oh, man, so I love weird. He tried to just pass it off as being French.
Just being French.
Yeah, just really like, I'm
making
quirky.
French noises.
Yeah. Oh, do you not understand me? I'm full of ennui. Sorry to all our French listeners. I actually think France is better than England. Now I've alienated all our English listeners. Oh, it's a whole political quagmire.
My English teacher was a drunk, if that helps. So now we've completely out.
See? We're all the same.
No one is special. We're all drunk.
At the end of the day, we're all self-medicated. And...
yes. Yes. Yes, we are. Today especially, for some reason. I had a really long day, you guys. Anyway, this is the start of the Troubles. Quick facts about this time. The Church of England does not yet exist. Christianity basically means Catholic and also Greek Orthodox, and that means under the control of Rome. So there is some friction between kings ruling their countries, but still having to follow the rules of the Catholic Church, which they are not in charge of. It's a huge thing. Now, some people thought it was controversial for one person to have these two jobs, Chancellor and Archbishop, because that is a conflict of interest. Mm-hmm. But King Henry thought it was a genius and shrewd move on his part, because then his busy mate is running the church stuff, and he thinks that that means the royal family will be able to control the church much better, because there's obviously been a bit of a power struggle there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But there is a problem for King Henry II. Question, what is that problem? It's something that happens now. It's not like, oh, it's a fact that you should have known. There is a problem.
Is Bitcoin just fluctuating? It's like, should I? Shouldn't I? Is it that? That's chancellorship,
okay, so we have
right?
Bitcoin, chancellors dealing with Bitcoin. Any advance from the two Hannahs?
God, what's happening now that would have happened in 11?
Well, it's not even, it's more, okay, I'll give you a clue. It's more, what does Thomas Becket do? Or feel that becomes that is a problem for Henry.
Oh, is he too moral about it? Like he cares about the people.
Well, I don't know about the people.
This is not what I had in mind.
He becomes, sorry to cut off the Hannahs. I'm just going to run with Taylor's correct answer. Yeah, he goes super religious.
Oh, right.
Okay. So these two could have gone either way, but he lent into religion.
These are these two things, and you couldn't have predicted this, but Thomas takes his role as Archbishop of Canterbury so seriously that he quits his job of Chancellor to focus on the religious stuff.
He can't have it all.
You can't have it all, guys. And there's all kinds of stories about him wearing a hair shirt, you know, the kind of the Catholic sort of punishment. There's like, it's called...
Is it a hair shirt?
Yeah.
So it's designed to scratch you?
Yes. It's like super itchy. And it's okay, so that you're doing
penance. I was a cheerleader and the acrylic sweater was very similar. I'm just saying I can relate.
I mean, I don't know if the spelling is... Yes, described as an aesthetic, A-S-C-E-T-I-C, but that is like somebody that is super religious and does all the, like, takes it super seriously, basically. Okay. So now there's a rift between him and his best friend of 12 years, King Henry II. Now, Henry is very disgruntled that his mate isn't doing everything he wants and he doesn't have absolute power over the church like he wanted. And not only that, but Thomas is literally opposing some of what he wants to do. So it's like even worse than he could have possibly thought. So just to give you an example of what this might look like, there is one of the issues is who gets to try clergymen who are accused of crimes, because it could be a secular court or it could be a royal, it could be secular or it could be a religious court.
Wow.
Okay. So they're literally fighting over who gets to, I'm assuming, try paedophiles, but like, probably not called that, is it? But whatever, if a clergyman has done a crime, who is trying him? Mm-hmm. The court of Rome or the court of whatever?
Right.
There's all of this going on. So there's back and forth. Henry's trying to loosen the ties to Rome. He wants clerical independence, but every other cleric is on board except Becket. They want to sign this new contract with Rome, and then they really fall out. Henry tries to charge Thomas Becket with contempt of royal authority, and Becket storms out of the court. Now it's 11
rifts between like best friends.
I mean,
did he like throw his best friend necklace back at him?
Oh my god, Hannah! Seriously, like that is what happened. 1164.
He threw his hair shirt back
Thomas
at him.
Becket, he storms out of the court. And he's afraid
it
for
scratches.
His life. It's lit, but seriously, people make fun of you know, Glee, but that is that it is that it's that I'm leaving. Okay, maybe not Glee specifically, but like some, you know, high school thing that is sort of what is happening here.
Yeah, I like it.
You'd have to be heightened, wouldn't you, back in those days? Because you'd never, like, because everything would just be sort of like, they'd say, oh my God, do you hear what happened? Mm. And like, you'd have to be, I suppose, quite loud and quite sort of theatrical in the things that you did, just because you only get to see them once, like nobody catches it on a camera phone. Like,
yeah, so you just have to live your life more dramatically.
Yeah.
People will notice you.
You're not going to go viral, so you have to shout the whole time. So he storms out drama style.
Love it.
He's afraid for his life. Now, my question is, what does he do? He's just fallen out with the king of the country he lives in. Mm. It's 1164. You're afraid for your life. What do you do? What does he do?
Flee.
Flee? Yes.
Don't know where, but flee. Another country.
Yes.
Does he go to Rome?
Okay, we've got flee. We've got Rome.
I think he just like gets stuck into like a Ben and Jerry's or something. When I've had an argument with my BFF.
Everyone except Hannah George is right. Oh. He flees, not to Rome, sorry. Taylor was half there. He flees to France. He lives under the protection of King Louis VII in France. He stays in this abbey for like 2 years. I deliberately did not write down the name of the abbey because I knew I would not be able to pronounce it, but it's there. And King Henry and him are still at it. They're sending each other threats by like courier pigeons.
That take 3 weeks to get there.
Yeah.
You have to stay angry for all of that time.
Honestly, they're doing like, they're having a WhatsApp spat. Like,
yeah, hair shirt made you look like shit.
Yeah. Everyone thinks you're a dick.
God damn it, I spelled hair shirt wrong. Go get the pigeon.
It's too late.
Drunk women solving crime.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Then Becket tries to threaten King Henry II with excommunication. Now, at some point with all this drama in this 2 years, somebody steps in to try and calm things down. Question, who steps in to try and calm things down?
Well, it's not a woman, because we already know women do not feature in this story.
There are no women in this story that have speaking parts.
I feel like Louis is the only other person that we've talked about.
Okay. We've got King Louis VII.
I love that as well, how you can just, like, back in the old timey days, you could just be like, I guess I'm going to go and be best friends with another king. Like, do you know what I mean? It's like, how do you just suddenly just go to France and be like, do you know what? Can someone hook me up with Louis? Because, me and kings, we have a thing. They like me. They like me. They love decision making.
Until they don't.
Diplomacy.
Is it 100% cotton sheets in the Abbey? I'm going to say the Pope, because I'm just going to keep saying the Pope.
Okay. Any difference from you, Cool Hannah?
I don't know any other people that would be alive in that time.
I don't know any of the names. Yeah, and that's fair enough. So Taylor nice. Glenn is 100% correct. It's the fucking Pope. Wow. Yeah. The Pope steps in. When the Pope is the voice of reason, you know it's the 12th century. Because that's when his views made sense, almost. Now, this is Pope Alexander III. He pops round. They hang out. Now, the Pope is sympathetic to Becket, but he thinks that there's a more diplomatic way of doing it. So, in 1170, the Pope sends some of his papal delegates to arbitrate, and they promise a solution. It's a compromise. And this allows Thomas to return from exile back to England.
They had PayPal back then?
It's a home run for Glenn. That was incredible.
But yeah, he gets to pay off his PayPal. He gets to...
It gets locked for 3 fucking months for no reason.
Then it's all fine and he's back. Bish, bash, bosh, job done. And that is a quote from the Pope. And it's great. They're about to be friends, but they just can't seem to stop pissing each other off. So things escalate again.
Oh, guys.
I know. It's really sad. Yeah. Question, what do you think happens next that they do that annoys each other? Or what do you think might have happened while this was going on that could contribute to them falling out again? Go wild. Go outside the box, because actually this might not be the best question. But if you can guess anything remotely close to it, I will be like, yes, very, very good.
What did they used to have back in those times? They had, like, chickens and stuff, didn't they?
They had chickens.
They had chickens.
Maybe they stole it, or, like, I don't know.
Okay. No, do you know what? I like how you're thinking, Hannah Cunningham, and I will give you a clue.
Livestock.
Can I have a guess? I mean, like, was there a war? That seems to be a thing that kind of... Because I was thinking, like... 1066 happened, but then I'm like, we're beyond 1066 now, aren't we?
1066 won't help you now, Island Hannah.
I was thinking, I know one war, it's the 1066 one, and that doesn't help me. But war seems to be a thing that can sort of come between people.
You're going to go war.
Guys.
Taylor, anything to add?
Do they start dating the same woman? Because it feels like that's the next.
So just to compound everything. No, okay, so nobody quite got it. Now, I will tell you what happened. While Thomas was away in exile, King Henry II got his oldest son coronated. I was going to say they have livestock, but they have family. But anyway, we don't need that clue. So he gets his oldest son coronated, so he's the young king. And it's something they used to do, like naming a, naming a successor, because he's the oldest, you know, he will, he's the heir. It didn't, terrible fact, it didn't happen in the end because that kid died before his dad died. So he was not the next king. A different son became the king. But he, this is something they used to do. They used to coronate the earliest born to sort of make succession easier with less fighting potential for fighting.
But he wasn't killed, he just died.
He just died of sickness.
It wasn't a Joffrey situation.
No, either. No. He was ill. Someone performed this sacred coronation ceremony for the king, for the young king, who wasn't Thomas Becket. And Becket was not happy about that. And he fucking kicks off, he gets back, and he fires everyone involved in the ceremony.
Oh, no.
And it's terrible because, you know, officially they were friends and Thomas is back in Canterbury Cathedral and he sacks off all of these people that did the ceremony that actually King Henry II was very happy about. So it is December when this happens. And now King Henry II is actually off on holiday in France, possibly with Louis VII. I don't know what Louis VII thinks about what's going on. But he's on holiday in France when this news reaches him that Thomas has sacked everyone that did this ceremony for him. It's like I'm picturing he was just sitting down with a mulled wine. He hears that this has happened. It's like, I don't know, like National Royal Lampoon's Christmas. Can I not just have a nice time without something going wrong? But
I feel like Thomas is having like some on the job stress.
Yeah,
it does. And I don't know if there's some sort of employee assistance counseling program.
It feels like Thomas is sort of being the aggressor at this point. But
like, I love a man with principles, but just like, calm down, Becky.
It feels like he's gone too far. Like, who's he trying to prove this to? The King Henry II hears this news. Now, this, you guys, is where we have the famous line. When he hears this news about all of his priests being sacked, and I don't know if you guys know this famous line.
Shit, my priest.
So it's a famous line. Okay, all my priests. Okay. I don't know.
All my priests is close.
Where are my priests at?
Closer. That's closer.
Oh, no, I've got nothing. I've got absolutely nothing.
What if I give you the first word?
Go on.
Who?
Who the fuck is going to replace them?
I mean, okay.
Dost thou forsake me, Lord? Okay. Wait, this is from the Bible.
Oh, is it who do you think you are? Do you think you are? Said, ooh. Was it that?
You know what? That was beautiful.
Oh, there's so many songs.
I'm going to go ahead and assume we're not going to get there, and I will tell you the famous line. Oh, shit, you guys.
Who will rid me of these troublesome priests?
Yes.
Or thingies? Yes. Was that it?
Yeah. Harry Cunningham is correct. There are different versions of this. Who will rid me of this turbulent priest? Will no one rid me of this turbulent priest?
I've never heard it.
Hilariously, that is not even correct. That is the showbiz version, that it's the famous version. History buffs know that isn't actually what he said, just to show that I did proper research.
But also mad props to Cool Hannah for getting that, because I've never
Cool Hannah! Yeah.
That was very
good. Yes, like, I'm a big Blackadder fan, so
yeah,
it's in there.
And that is all you need for this podcast.
Yeah, all my history knowledge is in that. If it's not in those decades, I don't know anything.
That is perfect. Do you know what? I've got such an urge to watch the Scarlet Pimpernel episode again. And I'm like, is that, can I stream that? Do I need to find a DVD in a box?
No, it's all on BBC iPlayer.
BBC iPlayer! I'm watching it tonight.
Right. Do you know what? I think that, like, Lord Flashheart is why I kind of have always, like, fancied, like, stand-up comedians. Like,
definitely.
I genuinely think that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very sexual.
Very sexual. And the only time Rowan Atkinson's ever been hot is season two, in, like, when he's, like, in the Elizabethan era, you know?
Yes,
like that's the only time he was hot, and then obviously never again.
Absolutely
totally see where you're going with that. No, there was the kind of the highbrow kind of that was working for him.
Mm.
I hear you.
Mm. It was. I agree. Mm. My husband made me watch it as part of my acclimatization program. He's like, you have to watch this. Yeah, and I'm like, okay.
It's like in Clockwork Orange. He was like, you have to watch all of this stuff, and then you can live in this weird country.
That was me. Because he didn't put eye drops in. It was very uncomfortable.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I just alternated Father Ted and Blackadder and tried to fit in.
That's what you need.
I get it now.
And then, like, every conversation, are you right there, Ted? And then, like, just the odds are that'll cover it. Anyway, just to cover our backs for the serious historians, according to historian Simon Sharma, what he actually said was, "What miserable drones and traitors have I nourished and brought up in my household? Who let their lord be treated with such shameful contempt by a low-born cleric?" But that doesn't have the razzle-dazzle.
That's very different.
It's so different.
Yeah.
It's a totally different conversation.
It's not a fun Blackadder moment, so it doesn't work.
Also, I think it really backs up the idea that people, like, shouted their shit back then because they have such, like, a kind of specific... They've written down what that was. Like, loads of people heard it. Someone must have written it down because...
What a long way to say it as well.
Yeah.
Because, like, mostly people would just be like, fuck's sake. Like, you wouldn't go through like this, like, really long.
Yeah, like, these days it's all about the eye roll.
Yeah.
Like, they had so much time on their hands about it. Like, 4 nights hear the king say this. This is might be where you guys know what happens. These 4 nights hatch a plan. Question, what is the knight's plan?
To murder the priest.
Yeah, it is.
Yes. Kill him.
Cool Hannah is on it.
Mm.
So now their original plan was to arrest Thomas to win favor with the king. They speed off to Canterbury. You know, they're in France. It takes a while. Arrive at Canterbury Cathedral.
Hold on.
They are exhausted, sweaty. They need liquids. It's a whole bit.
I assume everyone wore metal all the time.
Yeah,
so it's very sweaty.
It's a good point.
They'll have all that stuff from duty free that they'll want to just like get in the fridge.
They're like, they want to eat that Toblerone before it melts. Although it's not going to melt in England, is it? Now, it's December. They arrive at Canterbury Cathedral in the afternoon evening, which means that monks are singing the evening prayers. All kinds of people are milling around. They find Thomas and they confront him. They want to arrest him and take him to Winchester. Question, does Thomas Becket agree to go with them?
Of course he doesn't.
No.
No from Taylor. Hannah Cunningham is shaking her head.
No.
Oh, someone would have said something really fucking long, but like the short answer is no.
You are all correct. He does not agree.
That's full soliloquy.
He is all, I'll give you the short paraphrase version. He's like, Webs, mate, not coming. Now, the knights are cross with him. They're like, chain of command, mate. If you don't come with us, you're basically a traitor because you're disagreeing with the king. So they go off. Now, when you come into Canterbury Cathedral, you have to leave your weapons outside. They had done that. They go back to get their weapons to come back and get him because they'd left their weapons outside the cathedral. But while they're doing that, Thomas tries to go to a safer part of the cathedral. But before he can get there, they come back and they challenge him again. And now they've got weapons.
Doesn't seem like much of a system if you can just go back out and get them.
I mean, like, painting
with intent
to
use them. Yeah.
12th century, we've got some issues. but yeah, now there are different accounts of this, but basically I've pieced together, and many other historians have, what happened was this. Becket says, do you mean to kill me? And they go, yeah, actually, because you're a traitor. And he says, I'm not a traitor and I'm not afraid to die. And then in one account he's praying, in another account he's hugging a pillar, in another account he does this like cross blessing thing, but basically he's praying, he's being a religious man. Now I don't know if I need to say trigger warning, but this is history. They strike him from behind, and the first strike cuts the top of his head off, but like a scalping kind of cutting the top of his head off.
Yikes, okay.
He apparently keeps
kind of
praying.
Impressive.
They strike him several more times and they cut his head off. He falls forwards and dies. There is a lot of blood and there are a lot of witnesses to this. It is very shocking. It is a brutal murder in a sacred place.
To me, though, I'm just thinking, like, it sounds a bit like when you take the top off a boiled egg. I would have seen that.
It is that.
I've been like, oh, I mean, dip sank in
if
there.
If we want to kind of lighten the mood, does that help everyone picture boiled egg?
Were they trying to cut his head off and they just had terrible aim?
Well, they're just, they were just hacking at him. They just start hacking at him, but
then
genuinely,
the second blow takes it off, right? Like, they don't go like layer by layer.
It's the third blow that lodges in his head, and then the third blow actually takes the head off.
You can see how this would be a little Monty Python though, like half.
I mean,
just the mouth is left like, God, do it already.
Yeah. It's a flesh wound. This is a very religious time. Everyone's anti-murder, you guys. But it's a super big sin to kill someone while they're praying. Because I don't like, you got, that's like the plot line of Hamlet. I knew this, but I wrote it down because I knew I wouldn't remember everyone's names. But Hamlet hesitates to kill Claudius in Act 3 because Claudius appears to be praying, and Hamlet fears that if Claudius dies while praying, when his soul is at its most pure, he will go directly to heaven. And Hamlet wants Claudius to go to hell for his sins, so he doesn't kill him at that point. But that was a great point to kill Claudius. And there are repercussions. Anyway, we're not talking about...
So what's the best position to kill somebody and so they go to hell? Like they're doggy style or something?
Probably.
What's the least holy?
In like this frame of mind.
Yeah.
There is a huge fallout from this. Big mistake. Huge. It is like Pretty Woman times a million. The whole of Europe is absolutely shocked and very upset. And Becket becomes a martyr within 2 years. So in 1173, Pope Alexander makes him a saint. And the blowback is so bad that King Henry II, although technically innocent of saying, kill this guy, he's implicated. So he has to do penance twice with the Pope in Europe. He has to apologise to somebody in Canterbury Cathedral, like really publicly. It's basically like the Game of Thrones shame walk.
Oh.
Like because he has to apologise to Rome. So he eventually has to execute the people that did it. And he initially didn't want to kill his loyal knights. I just want to read you what I've got here. Like how Boris didn't want Matt Hancock to resign for breaking lockdown to have an affair. This was topical when I wrote it at the end of June. Because I sometimes plan cases ahead. You never know what's going to happen. There is a shrine. There are artifacts. It's a huge pilgrim site. And I've got to tell you guys, this really put England on the map. In terms of shrines, but it's a huge deal, it turns out. There's tons of miracles. The fame really grows. It's this Canterbury Cathedral becomes one of the top five shrines in the world.
And
it's one of the biggest pilgrimage sites, along with somewhere in Spain, there's Rome, there's Jerusalem, and I think Lourdes. And then I ran out of time to double check everything. But basically, it's the top five shrines under the hemisphere of the Catholic Church. That's a big deal. Chaucer writes about it. Loads of people are coming.
I've done this on the podcast, right? You know, I had to memorize the prologue of the Canterbury Tales in Middle English in high school.
Oh, my God. No. Did you?
Oh, my God.
I don't remember all of it, but I can do a little bit. I must have done this on a different podcast.
Oh, please do
how
some.
Weird.
Do it. Do it.
Do Chaucer.
It's weird because I have the worst memory ever, but this stays in my brain. It's so useful.
Awesome.
I don't get to bust it out, but here we go. Okay. Wan that opera with the shore sota, the drought of March hath persed to the rota, and bothered every vein in switch liquor, of which virtue engendered is the floor. One zephyrus ache with a sway to breath, and spirit hath every holt and heath, the tender croppers and the shit. Hoth and the rom, something have a cause, your runner. Oh, I forget it.
Oh,
and
man,
smaller forms, wow. Not a melody, but slapping all the words with open ear. And oh. Palmer's for to say can strand, strand, yeah, it's
okay.
It's
tricky. Yay, well done. That's very good.
I feel like this is like a highbrow version of me going, now this is a story. That's what I meant in high school.
I have no idea what you said, but it was lovely.
Yeah, in an American high school, who knows if they like taught us how to say it properly.
They made you do that in America. It was like incredible. They made us do it here.
I remember my English teacher would, she read it out loud, like in the accent or what they thought the accent was. But like, as I said, she was a drunk, so no. So I just, I think it's the accent.
But I do think who teaches you this stuff has such an effect on what you think of it. Because, like, we learned it from such a dry teacher that then went on to have a mental breakdown. And then I met someone at university, because we did Wife of Bath in A-levels. And then I met this girl at university and I was like, oh God, yeah, the Wife of Bath. And she was like, oh, it was amazing. I was like, what? And like in her teacher had said, oh, so this word means cunt. And basically the Wife of Bath is always talking about how much pleasure she's had five husbands. And like she keeps marrying young people and sure they hit her and now she's deaf. But like they really pleasure her and like this and like it's like that. These are all euphemisms for twat and like. And I was like, why didn't I have your teacher? I would have fucking loved
it's really body.
About.
It's really body stuff.
Like, yeah, this is incredible. Anyway, we digress. Sorry.
Pilgrimages.
This is also Thomas Becket, Big Shrine. The Tudors trash it all. Henry VIII trashes it all. I know. God. And it's this huge shrine, Catholic church. He married Henry VIII's first wife is obviously a devout Catholic. So he's like giving presents. Oh, yeah, love all this. But then he falls out, obviously, with the church in Rome and he wants more power. So like basically a group of his royal agents / thugs go and trash, like they smash the thing to smithereens.
You're odd, mate. Yeah, fucking...
Honestly, 600-year-old
shrine. Oh, you're fucking hard. Take that out.
That's what we're talking about. And they take all the jewels and marble back to the palace and they burn the body and they throw the ashes to the wind.
Oh, my God.
And they destroy the legacy of Thomas Becket and they books with stories about how great Thomas is are defaced and scribbled on or destroyed.
Wow.
It's like a very much there can only be one Caesar kind of attitude.
Oh, my God.
But I also think that he saw what happened with, like, Henry II and he didn't ever want to have to apologise to Rome. I feel like it was like, all right, lesson learned. Like, we have to destroy you.
Well, he's like the original malignant narcissist. Like, he just took it to such an extreme because within the laws of the day he could. But, like, you know, Trump would have done everything he did if he could have.
Oh, my God.
He would have been beheading people.
Fucking imagine.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I didn't want to think about what happens in 4 years. But, yes, that would be terrible.
We'll all be underwater, so.
Yay! We'll be so busy trying to catch fish and... it'll be fine. But Canterbury is still a big favourite with Catholics outside of Britain. And I went to the Thomas Becket exhibition at the British Museum, which is where I got the idea for this case. And I've seen the scribbled on books. And there's a wax seal. There's a letter thing. And it's Thomas Becket's wax seal. So you know that his hand put that wax on the thing that we're seeing from 11 whatever.
That's cool.
Pretty cool.
It was my favourite bit of the whole thing. And also I didn't have to feel bad like, well, at least this should be here. This isn't like we should be giving this back to all the countries that this actually belongs in.
Like all the other museums.
Yeah. Like all of those marbles. Yes. Terrible. Very much should leave. But I'm allowed to look at this wax seal and not feel shame.
I wish
it was amazing.
I wish when you got like a crotch wax, they'd put a little seal on it and they'd just keep it. I would say like Brazil or...
And then when it's opened by... I don't know. Anyway.
Well, listen, I don't know what to raise a glass to in this case, but I'm going to say maybe to the Pope solving problems.
For once.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Drunk women solving crime.
We have just enough time to discuss a listener crime before we can hear more from Hannah. So, somebody has written to us. Now, this is from Renata in Germany, and she says, excitingly, I finally witnessed a petty crime for you to solve. Aww. So we've got our listeners pumped to
We're
be witnessing crimes. And she says, a few weeks ago, a friend and I were walking down a suburban street when we heard an angry sounding yell. We saw two cyclists riding towards our street. The one in front was an elderly man in his 70s, and the one in the back was younger, 30s to 40s. As they rounded the corner, the younger cyclist pedalled hard and caught up to the older one and rammed the old man's back wheel. The bikes latched and a bit broke off the old man's bike, so he stopped to pick it up while the younger man rode off. The old man rode off too, but up ahead at the lights, the light had turned red, so they had to sit parked next to each other for a solid minute.
Oh my God, awkward.
I know.
That's so cool.
That is the stuff of awkward dreams.
It's so German too. Rules are rules.
Yeah, I rammed you, but I'm going to wait at this line.
Yeah.
Oh, we get a ticket. Oh, that's
this
great.
Is a proper.
So when they just peacefully sat side by side at a red light.
For a solid minute, when it turned, they rode off in separate directions. My friend later translated that the younger man had yelled, "You won't get away." What happened here?
Oh
my goodness.
Well, so it, like, what, like, you won't get away. It sounds like a threat, like maybe he'd stolen something, but also maybe sounds like they were just having a race. I'm not sure.
You but won't then get away.
Grandfather and grandson, little friendly, but they don't live in the same house. Nope.
Yeah, and then they had to go different ways.
So the younger guy rammed the older guy. The younger guy is the one who shouted, "You won't get away." And he knocked a bit off of his bike.
Yeah. So it sounds like the younger one's got beef with the older one.
It suggests that maybe the older one had already done the ramming to the younger one.
Yes, it could be payback.
And then he was like, "You won't get away. I'm going to do it to you." And then they awkwardly sat out of line because they both had rammed each other.
Okay, so it's kind of even Stevens.
We're done. Even Stevens. And that's why they waited so politely at the traffic lights.
They were like, fair game.
It's equal. We can go our separate ways.
Yes.
And justice has been restored.
Yeah. Maybe they even shook hands. I don't know.
Maybe. Before they drove off down the Autobahn.
The Autobahn. Very good.
Thank you.
I mean, that makes more sense than anything I can think of right now. It's such a funny setup.
There's so much that could have happened. They could know each other. They could, maybe the older guy used to have a comb over and wear beige and go to shops. And you know, the guy in his 40s, 30s, 40s is like, "I know who you are. You won't get away. I'm coming for you." But we will politely go our separate ways now. But, you know, your days are numbered.
At what point he said, "You won't get away"? Because if he hits him and then shouts, "You won't get away," that suggests that his kind of like, that what he's there to do hasn't been done. But if he says, "You won't get away," then he grabs him, the thing falls off, whatever it is. Then it feels like, because it feels like by the time they've got to the traffic lights, they'd sort of sorted out their differences.
Yeah. They'd calmed down, or at least they didn't want to die on the road, so they had to concentrate.
I wonder if the older guy had been driving a bit recklessly and maybe like blew past the younger guy and he's incensed because he's like twice my age. But he did it in a dangerous way. So he decided to like chase after him, "You won't get away," but then he was shocked that he actually rammed him. Like, I wonder if he was just like, couldn't believe.
He didn't mean to ram him.
And then this piece falls off and he's like, "Oh my God." So he was just kind of in shock, and the old man's in shock. So they're like in shock together at the red light. And they're like, "Well, gotta go that way."
Yeah, it reminds me of, did anyone ever watch World's Wildest Police Chases?
Yeah.
Oh, sometimes.
It was like an American thing with Sheriff John
Bonnell.
I've
seen it.
Yeah. And he would, one of his like catchphrases was, "He can't get away." And for some reason, it reminds me of that, because they're always like, "In Scotland, England." Like, they're going to do things like that. And then we'll say, it feels like maybe it was the end of a chase. Because you know when a chase ensues, like a kind of, you very rarely see sort of the end of the chase. And if it was true.
Imagine if all of those chases just ended with everyone going home.
Well, to be fair, we don't know how long they were cycling for. So they could have been cycling for like hours, and they finally get to this last bit. And they're just playing tag with their bikes.
Yeah.
And then they finally...
It's just bants between friends.
It's just pure bants between a grandfather and his grandson. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah, they may have spoken to each other at the red light, but you couldn't hear at that point.
Same
time tomorrow.
Yeah, they could have been quietly trash-talking each other.
Just like, "Fuck you."
Yeah, like, you, like they were quietly waiting, but actually they were like, "Your mother sucks cocks in hell."
The very opposite of the 12th century people. "You fucking idiot."
Yeah. Everyone thinks you're a dick.
You can't give a big speech on a bike. No. Bikes changed everything about big, dramatic speeches.
I don't know. Well, the person wants to know what happened here. I feel like we have more questions than answers. Should we pick what happened?
I'm sure at least one of us got pretty close to it. Right?
We've covered it.
I think the grandpa, grandson, just having a good time. It's a family game that they play to confuse people in the hope that they listen to a podcast.
Oh, you think they're like messing with listeners? Yes.
Yeah, I think that. Well, they're just. I think they're just messing with people.
Like sometimes when
everyone's a listener,
you know, like when you're younger and you're like, I'm going to do an accent tonight. I'm going to go to a bar and pretend I'm from Liverpool. And like everyone's going to think I really am, and then like think they're cycling around going, oh my god, everyone's going to think we really hate each other, this is so funny.
and let's make it really confusing as well, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah,
I want to know what the bit that fell off the bike was it the wheel or like what, and how quickly did he put it back on,
how
like...
important was it?
Yeah, how detrimental to the ride was it, is that why they stopped?
How fucked is that guy now without that bit? Okay, so it feels like our conclusion is they knew each other and everything's fine.
Yeah.
Rather than vendetta with more to come.
Yeah.
Okay, it's so adorable. Renata, I hope that helps. And I hope I haven't mispronounced your name. And if I have, I'm really sorry, but I'm
you
a terrible
say
Renata, person.
I say Renata.
Yeah, I think it is Renata. Isn't that?
Really sorry, Renata.
I think you said Renata at the beginning as well. It's like you're covering both bases.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Renata,
I'm
Renata.
Renata.
I'm not my best self today, and I wish I could have given your name more respect. This is the part, I hope we helped. This is the part of the podcast where we would like to hear much more from our guest, Hannah Cunningham, Empty Alien. What are you up to? What do you want to plug? Where can we find you? Where can we see you? What's happening?
Oh my goodness. So probably just on socials, to be honest. It's just all my makeup work. And you'll see, so it's on Instagram mostly. So it's Empty Alien on there. If you search that, it's probably the first one. I can't imagine there's that many more people with that name.
Yeah,
just on there, and you'll see any upcoming DJ gigs that I have coming up on there as well. It's mostly just in and around London or Brighton in pubs here and there. That's all it is.
But cool.
Yeah, that's it really. So just follow me on socials.
Let's do that. It just remains for me to say thank you so much to our guest.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Empty Alien, Hannah Cunningham.
Thank you so much.
Drunk Women Solving Crime is produced by Amanda Redman. Music by The Lion and the Wolf. If you would like to, you can follow us on Drunk Women Pod on Twitter. On Facebook and Insta, we are Drunk Women Solving Crime. And please review us on Apple Podcasts. And also, if you have a crime that you would like us to solve, write it on a review on Apple Podcasts as well. Thank you to Acast, and thank you for listening. Bye!